time has been. I'm not calling. Let's go ahead and get started. We want to get started with the AA speaker. We start with a few moments of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Moment. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. Ask Kevin to come up and read how it works.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kevin. I am an alcoholic. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. But we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which were suggested in this program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for his knowledge, or only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order. I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. These principles that we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapters to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sad.
And we've asked Denise to come up and read the traditions for us.
Thank you. My name's Denise, and I'm an alcoholic. And these are the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. First, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God to see me express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. NCAA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Sinead's going to come up and read the promises.
I'm Sinead, an alcoholic addict. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurities will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Thank you.
Our AA speaker tonight is Cole W. I've asked Peter to come up and introduce him.
Hello, I'm Peter. I'm an alcoholic. Nice to see all of you tonight. Nice to have a nice meal in front of us. Cole Word and us go back a bit. When we first came to Texas in 1990, there wasn't a meeting in Clifton, so my wife and I and Cole and several others decided we needed one and began one in the church there. And that one went from there to down to the armory, and Cole participated in it. But I think it took a bit for him to really get onto this program. You know that when the learner is ready to learn, the teacher appears. And Cole was attending an AA group over at Whitney, and there he ran into Josh Hall. And Josh Hall seemed to find a special pathway into Cole's heart, and I saw just a maximum jump in terms of the way he was doing his program. That not only lasted, but now that Josh is gone, Cole is perpetuating that by at the Brazos Conference. They have a golf tournament every year in honor of Josh Hall, and Cole is the one that is the chairman of that golf tournament. So he is quite a good golfer. when I was asked to introduce him, I thought, I have an opportunity now. There are some things about Cole that I could share. And so I approached him about this because we have gone to man-to-man. We've gone to man-to-man about 6 or 7 years, and we get in a golf game out there, and Cole is usually a part of that. And 2 years ago, something happened to the scores, and you know, the final accounting never was taken. And that meant that the money did not pass hands. So last year, we determined that we were going to make sure in this little golf outing that the money changed hands. And so I got together with a friend of mine, Doug, and we did a little plotting in terms of making sure that the scores were accurate and the golf cards were there and so on. And at the end of the round, what happens, but Doug and I each owe Cole a dollar. We go to get something to eat, and not only does it require us to give him the dollar, but we have to put our name on it. And he still holds those $2, and I thought maybe tonight I could put a little leverage on him and get that dollar back. But you see, he's tough. This is a program of honesty, and I just want to say that Cole is somebody who has really done a lot for AA, and AA has done a lot for him. Cole, come on up.
He'll never get those dollars back.
I show them to them every year at Man to Man. It's our ritual. Get the dollars out and hold them. They're dated. Doug Harris, Peter Anderson. My name's Cole Word, and I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety at age June the 27th, 1994, and I'm very grateful for that. Honored to share the podium with Laverne. Thank you. God bless you. What a beautiful lady. I can't think of a place I'd rather be on a Saturday night than right here with a bunch of drunks. I've got, and son, what's your name? Cameron. There's not many nights I eat deviled eggs and chili. So you can continue to sit there, but if you hear something, don't say anything. My wife is probably real grateful she didn't come down here to this meeting with me. Might have been a long ride back to Meridian. I want to thank everybody who cooked the chili. I was trying to get, where's Amanda? She had the best cake. She will not give me her grandmother's recipe. But I've been working on her. Good meal. This is what it's all about. It always touches my heart, too. To look out and see this many people with a smile on your face and clean and sober and doing this deal. It's a miracle. If nothing else is said or you don't hear anything else tonight, know that every one of us, by sitting here and claiming our seat, by God's grace, we're miracles. The rest is just gravy. As long as we live and suit up and show up and come here and fellowship together and eat together and smile together and laugh together and eat deviled eggs. And as long as we come here, and see, isn't God's grace a beautiful thing? You can sit there and nearly, you know, alcoholics are beautiful. We sit there and nearly, and with the tears going down here, I still ask this guy to pull my finger. Because that's the way we are. We're a finger-pulling crowd. Yeah. And, man, I've got a lot of, not only do I have a lot of sobriety ties here in Waco, I've got a lot of drinking ties. Because, you know, Disney World stretch was at Caravan West, and the old Continental Cowboy, and the Melody Ranch, and Rocky Raccoons. I mean, as soon as we could, as we knew what was going on, and we got a little money from Meridian, I mean, we'd come to the city. We'd come to Waco. A lot of my drinking and drugging was done down here in Waco. I guess the first One of the first chips I ever got was at the Triangle Group, and it was not even over here on 25th. It was up there on Franklin in the little shopping center up there. Yeah. And then it moved down to the where it is today, the dungeon, I called it. Old Woody was down there, and I remember Bob Adair and Frank Schulf used to come on Tuesdays, and they'd set up camp in there in the little back room back there, and Steve Brown and Big James and Gary Crew, a bunch of them guys, they'd line up. It looked like Baskin Robbins. And they'd be lined up waiting to go back there and talk to their sponsors. Oh, what a deal. My drunkalog, you know, I graduated from Meridian, small school. We did what you do out in small towns and communities. I didn't get caught when I was in high school. That's why I didn't get in much trouble. But there was a lot of drinking, played all the sports. And one of the biggest decisions that really started my life down the wrong path was the transition that I didn't make out of high school, and I chose not to go to college. I had a ticket to go to college, and I said, no thanks. I believe I'll go to work for Brandon Root, and we're going to go party and drink beer and, you know, lived a good life. And that was one of the starts of my heavy drinking, is when I didn't make the transition. When you're in a small town, I mean, you're really kings around there. And it seems like one day you graduate and wake up and all this, the pressure just hits you and everybody's asking, what are you going to do now? I didn't know. I actually didn't know. So I kind of checked out and went to drinking and running pretty hard, and that's what I did, you know, and just ran the bars down here in Waco. We'd work during the week and hang loose, rest up, get a little money in our pockets, and we'd get tamped. And that's what I did. And I listened to speakers that can, you know, relate and tell you about there are 10 to 15 years there, folks, that I don't remember. I mean, that's the way I drank. I was a blackout drinker. Their ex-wives, my wife, Sonia, we met in NAA, and she'll tell you she's not my fourth wife, she's my last one, is the way she puts it. But there were failed relationships, bad relationships, some official marriages, some non-official marriages, you know. And, I didn't do very good. In 81, I was leaving. I've been in this jail right down Waco Drive here. It's a little small city jail. Drunk in public, disorderly conduct. You know, we'd get in the wrestling matches out there at Caravan West and Airport Park. God almighty. Ooh, the weekends out there, I still remember the Sunday nights, and it was, you know, pitch till you win out there, and then go to Caravan West, and that had the free keg there. The way I drank, I left here, woke up in San Angelo on the floor of my best friend's Woosley's dorm room out there. Don't remember getting out. Show up out there barefooted without a shirt, and I wake up on his dorm room floor. Last thing I remember was leaving Caravan West Sunday night, free beer. That's the way I drank. But I got out of jail here and was trying to make it back to the Hall of Fame down at College Station. I ran under a semi truck out here. Don't remember. I got out of jail. And don't remember leaving the watering hole, I think is what it was, out there at the circle. Should have been dead. I mean, my sponsor had me, he'd always have me inventory my scars. And I ran under the truck, and I've got the picture here. I was just showing someone at the table. I mean, I should have been dead. In traction for 55, the only way I lived, it crushed my hip and pelvis, they'd take my spleen out, punctured a lung, and I wake up in ICU at the Old Providence Hospital. trying to figure out what the hell happened. And the doctor said, well, you've kind of had a car wreck. And Dr. Etheridge, he's still around here. Mean son of a gun, too, wasn't he? But I said, you're going to be in the hospital 10 to 12 months. And I threw a fit. And he came in there and he said, he got in my face. Let me tell you something. He said, normally when you get a laceration like you had, you bleed to death in about 20 minutes. He said, it took them 40 minutes to get you here from out on 77, Galinda. He said, there was a Robinson City policeman that wrapped his fist in gauze and stuck it in your side. And that's the way we came to the hospital. And he said, it somehow sealed that spleen and allowed you to live to get here. So we did the surgery and everything, and I kind of calmed down. I'm not a real smart, but I know the grace of God. Even in the midst of my alcoholism, I know the grace of God when I see it. And I called, we called all the preachers in, and, they prayed on me, and, man, I was through. I had seen the light. God had saved me, and I knew it. I feel a preaching coming on. But they laid hands on me, and I was through. I was going to get out and go to the seminary, and me and Jesus were going to save the world. And I did good for a while in the hospital, and that was the plan. But Providence Hospital is a Catholic hospital. And I was in traction. I had to lay there. My hip and pelvis was crushed so bad. I laid there in traction. And they finally took the tube out, got my lung and all this squared away. So I'm laying there at this leg. I've got to have it pulled out of socket to let the pelvis, all that grow, and then they'd let the leg back in the socket. And I popped off one day. I said, I believe this. I could make it if I hadn't been one of those old silver bullets. And that nurse said, you're in a Catholic hospital. I'll check with the doctor. My boys show up from Brown and Root down there. When I relayed the message, we have a little party there one Sunday afternoon, and I nearly get thrown out of the hospital. Is that tape on? We're smoking marijuana in Providence Hospital. And drinking beer. And I was off and running again before I ever got out of the hospital. Kept beer in the refrigerator up on the fourth floor where all the wrecked up people stayed. And I had beer in the refrigerator when I left. Got out of the hospital and the drinking, it got bad then. Holed up at my mom and dad's, I had all these brilliant flashes of brilliance of what to go do, and I went to bartending school up in Dallas, and I got my professional bartending card, and I loaded up my good alcoholic, your stereo and a few clothes and your stuff, and ended up in Colorado up in the mountains bartending. And from 81 to 85, 87, I'm just telling you, it was a blur. There were the car wrecks, the jails, DWI. I drank myself out of a golf school up in Michigan. I mean, everywhere I went, I finally showed up, And when I showed up in the drinking, the screw-ups were right there. But I got into the AA. I picked up a desire chip down in Austin back in 81, 82, about 82. But I was, after being in jail here in Waco again, we number them in my drinking chronologue. I'm with number three here in Waco, ex-wife number three. Bad deal there. There was abuse and the drinking and the blackouts. And I picked up a desire chip, I believe, down at the old Triangle group then. And that's when I first really came into AA. And worked the steps my way, kind of. You know, from 87 to 92, and I can tell you, from 87 to 92, I was one of those 1, 2, 3, you know, kick. Did the first three steps, and then I'd kick and say, well, I ain't going to do that fourth one. You know, and they'd do the four-step meetings at inventory. I'd kind of conveniently check out to the coffee bar. But the Triangle, I mean, I didn't drink, you know, from 87 to 92. And was going to the deer unit down there on Tuesday nights. They used to have the deer unit and called him the governor. Down there, I think Bill Clements worked down there. And you know, he would go down there, and I, you know, was trying to string some sobriety together. Like I said, I didn't drink, and I'd get my chips. But I was still half-stepping this program. And we had a five-year birthday, and I was living out in Valley Mills, wife and stepson at the time. And one of the guys I'd met in the deer unit came out, got my five-year chip. And he came back, I guess, as far as I know, and broke into the house. My stepson and a schoolmate came home, and he was in the house. And thank God he didn't kill them, but he did tie them up, got my shotgun, and they said he chambered one and stood over them for a long time, and it got real quiet. And thank God he didn't kill them. But you could see on the bed, they dumped out my change, and I kept my chips there. And I think that he saw those chips in AA, and somehow it maybe changed his mind on what he was going to do. He turned around and walked out the door. And we finally we figured out who it was and had to sit in court and go through that deal. And it was an ordeal. Everybody went to get help with it at the time but me. At that time, I had divorced God. I had quit going to meetings. I had quit calling my sponsor. I hadn't done that fourth step. I hadn't sat down and done that fifth step. Everybody else kind of dealt with it, and I got real angry and started drinking O'Doul's. The subject that's never talked about much in AA. If anybody is messing with O'Doul's, you better put them down. Because I was sipping the O'Doul's, drinking the O'Doul's, and start smoking a little weed again. I thought, God, finally, utopia, the secret to life. I was playing golf one day at Bosque Valley and looked down, and there was a silver bullet in that hand. It wasn't an O'Doul. I remember it happening just like that. I was off and running again. Get the call from the attorney. Restraining order. You need to get some. I blacked out again. Woke up one more time. The house is torn up. Nobody's there. Going through, looking through the room, seeing, you know, are there bodies here or what. Get the call. You need to get some stuff. Get out. You know, another family, another home. Down the drain. Alcohol. You know, showed up one more time. And this last time, I ended up over at Lake Whitney, Texas. And I tell you, I can tell you where hell's at. And I was over there holed up. And the funny thing about it is that I would drink, and I drank in an old bar over there called the Season Ticket. And it's right next door to the greatest AA group supposedly in the world. The Lake Whitney group. But I can remember getting out of that car, and I'd stand there a long time, and I could look and see that light over there at the Bonanza, the AA group, and I could see those old dim lights, and I could hear that music. I knew I should be going here, but I chose and went there. And my drinking got bad then. Really had a fun time. I'd sit at the bar and stare at the mirror, and I'd spin a quarter. And I got where I can show you if you had a quarter. I'd spin the quarter, and I'd do that for hours. And I'd drink, and I'd look in that mirror, and I'd spin that quarter. And I ended up one night back at that lake house with a bag of dope and a shotgun. And I was at a place, and I can tell you what hell is. At that moment, I was there because you don't want to live anymore, and you're afraid to end it. It talks about that. There's a place in the Big Book. I was living with the Rottweiler was the only thing living with me when I drank. But old Cindy Bell came over there and laid her head in my lap and looked me straight in the eye. And I, you can believe it or not, but God, I heard God through that old dog that night. And that old dog said, Hoss, you better get your butt back to AA. I crawled, literally crawled back to the Laguna Park group. Met Josh Hall. And that was June the 27th, 94. And I was whipped. And he knew I was whipped. I knew I was whipped. That night, he gave me one of the most important things I've ever been handed in my life. He said, I can tell you're ready for this deal. And he said, I'm going to give you the secret. And Josh was always a scribbler. And he drew this on the sheet of paper, and he sectioned the cross off in five different sections. And he put a little work, a little play, a little faith, a little love, and a little AA every day. He said, it's just that simple. He said, you get up and you put some action in every one of these squares, and you'll keep that cross balanced. He said, balance. He was a big proponent of the word balance. He said, you'll keep that cross balanced. And if you'll get up every day and take care of your faith, turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him every day. Get your butt to work and be self-supporting through your own contributions. Throughout the day, show love to your fellow woman and fellow man. Open the door for the ladies at the post office. Smile and tell people you love them. Be kind during the day. Call another member of Alcoholics Anonymous every day. You talk to a person in recovery every day in AA. And then when you do all that, go play. Whatever it is, guilt-free play. And he said, we alcoholics are too serious. We don't play enough. We don't come cook chili and pull our fingers enough. We're all too serious. But how simple is that? I mean, that's it right there, the program in a nutshell. And he took me through those steps. Time we got. He took me through those steps. He reached out and took my hand. We worked the first step, you know, and I listed the top 10, like a David Letterman top 10 list. I had a bunch of them, but we tried to pick the top 10. And we went through the top 10, and there's no doubt. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm an addict, and I am powerless. Second step, turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand it. I came in here with y'all's God in a bad understanding. The God that I carried around for years, he was pretty hard on you, and he would whip you. And he would whip you for doing bad. And he said, if we're going to have any success at this deal, we're going to have to come up with a new concept of God. And it wasn't anything earth-shattering, but I had to write a description of the God I came in here with. And if I could turn my will and my life over to the care of God, what would He be? And I wrote them down. And he took this one and threw him away. He said, Hoss, we're fixing to ride with this one. And we held hands and we got down on our knees and did the third step prayer. And that right there I do on a daily basis. It's one of the most powerful prayers I think there ever is. I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them shall bear witness to those I might help of thy love, thy power, thy way of life. May I do thy will always. I don't know about y'all, but I've never gotten down, held hands, and said that prayer with another man till then, and something changed in my life. And then we started working on that fourth step. And I'd ask him, he'd, oh, you know. He'd wave me off. And he'd say, just go make the list. If there's anyone here that hasn't done your fourth step, go make a list. That's all you have to do. And then we plug them in one at a time. And I'd start talking. He said, no, just go make the list. So I had 48 people, places, and things on my first list, 48 of them. And we'd plug them in. He'd say, what happened? Just write me a little bit what happened. What did it affect? How did it affect you? And he gave me some key words that I had to go look up in the dictionary where I could understand that. And then that, and David, I think you've said it, and I've heard it said, it was not an immoral inventory, it was a moral inventory. And the purpose is not to push me down any further. I'm my own worst enemy. I don't need any more of that. I've done it for years. The purpose of that is to find what's salvageable, what's good. There's a lot of good in each and every one of us, but we've covered it up with the drugs and alcohol for so many years that we've got to clear away that wreckage of the past and get to what's useful. What can God use to rebuild this life? What can He scrape together and pour for that foundation? And that's what came out of my fourth step. Not only was I afraid, and a chicken, you know what? But I was afraid. You know, and he said, I always mask my fear with anger. I didn't know that. If I'm afraid, if you get me scared, you better look out, because somebody, I always mask fear with anger. So I sat down with him, and we went over this in depth. We went over that fifth step. And there's power in that fifth step when you look another human being in the eye and admit your faults. Because Josh was always pretty smooth. He said, go on and get the thing you weren't going to tell me about. Let's go and get it out of the way. Because he said, after that, I can get over and lay on the couch and listen to you for 4 or 5 hours. Because he said, if you drink and do, we all did the same thing. We got in the wrong bed with the wrong people in the wrong houses. We lied, we cheated, and we stole. That's the greatest thing that you'll ever do in life. When God gets you to a point where He can use you, if you're not there yet, don't give up. Because if He can use me, He can use each and every one of you. He can use anybody. But when you get to a point, when God gets you to a point in life where He can use you to help another alcoholic, that's my high today. That's what I love doing. So we carry the message and practice these principles in all our affairs. Josh told me that'd be the hardest thing to do, because to put this thing into practice. And my wife is in recovery also, and we have our moments. Who doesn't? You know, when you try to live together and you've got the work and the pressure and the responsibility of keeping those car payments paid, that house going and food and all that, life isn't easy. It's tough and it's hard. But we've got help today and we've got solutions. I've got a partner today. Not only do I have God and the fellowship with you folks, but I've got a real partner today. God, we've grown so much in Alcoholics Anonymous. Doug, we were talking about Doug and Barbara and Billy, Jerry Jones, all these folks, Gordon and Donna Pickett, Gordon and Stephanie. I remember, you know, we've been around a lot of winners in our marriage. We've gone to family afterward meetings. We've gone to couples meetings. A lot of couples aren't still married. They went to those couples meetings because those couples meetings are a son of a gun. They're not that bad, but the meetings after that meeting on the way home. Well, I've learned one of the greatest things the pearl of wisdom. You don't have to verbalize every thought you have. One of the greatest things I've ever learned that works in a relationship. And some days I can do it. You know, some days I can do it. When I'm in constant contact with the God as I understand Him and you folks, I can be a good husband some days. But we've had a kind of a neat deal. We've got Justin's a senior, my oldest son, and then Kylie was born. My birthday is June the 27th, 94. He was born June the 28th in 96. One more time, see to it that your relationship with God is right and great things will come to pass for you and countless others. Wow, what a blessing. I'm a rich man. Rich man. I've got so many things that I've got to see, and I'm aware and alive and sober in this fellowship that I know the grace of God when I see it again today like I did that day back in Providence Hospital. Except I know what to do with the grace of God today. I treasure it. I don't take it and rub it back in God's face like I did for so many years. Got to take my little boy to school first day. Cry up there at the rest of the mothers. I get to have a relationship and talk about college and to share with my oldest son the mistakes and what I've learned from it. The biggest mistake I ever made was not making that transition out of high school into college. And we can sit down and I can look him in the eye and I'm helping him. He's Poindexter smart. He's like a rocket scientist. He made a 30 on his ACT. My understanding, that's automatic admission on some of the schools. We filled out applications to A&M and Tech. With the grace of God and help of Uncle Sam, he's going to go to college. And I'm going to be there to help him and share that with him. Followed my son, my little one, to school on his bicycle. Taught him how to ride his bicycle. He wanted to ride it to school, and I never forget it. I can see it just as plain as day right now. He's pedaling that little bike with that backpack on, and that sun's hitting him. And I'm following him in that car, man. That's rich. That's the good stuff, guys. And I hope you're not missing it. I hope you sit in this chair long enough. We heard it at Man to Man, didn't we? Come all the way in. Sit all the way down and stay. There's miracles that take place in this room every day. Got to go to Disney World with my family. You know, I've watched Tinkerbell light that damn house up ever since I was his age. I even saw Tinkerbell when it was in black and white, you know, before we even had color TV. And we're standing there, and they're doing that fireworks show at 10 o'clock at night after that parade, and they light that thing up. And they play that little hokey song. When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are. When your dreams come true. And out of the corner of my eye, we're standing there. We're you know, tears again. I cry at Lassie, you know. But there's this Asian family there. And I watched them. Man, they're hugged up. And this guy's a wreck. He's physically shaking and crying. And I thought, wonder what price he paid to get here. And all I could think about was the program and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. As I stood there with my family, and that part in the big book that says, we've been given the keys to the kingdom. We've been given the keys to the kingdom. We've still got a shot at this deal. And I'm going to share this last part, not to brag or say, look at me, but I always had a dream. I come from a long line of politicians. My dad was county judge in Bosque County. His brother was county judge in Bosque County. My uncle was county judge in Bosque County. And my great uncle was county judge in Bosque County. And my great great grandfather was county attorney. And I always wanted to take my shot at that, but I was always scared. Because I was the crazy man around there, and I ran around there and drank and did my deal. Because I knew deep down that I never could fill my dad's shoes. But I came in here in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got with that sponsor, Josh Hall, and I found God, and I worked these steps, and they said, why don't you put that name on the ballot, Halson, to see what happens? And this was after years of sobriety, and I was scared to death. But we did that. We got out and worked. Now county judge up in Bosque County. And that's not me. That's God. That's you people. And that's this program. And I looked down there one day, and it wasn't that I filled my dad's shoes. I was standing in my own. And I'm able to do that because I keep circling up and holding hands, and I keep coming back, and I keep praying with you people, and I keep working this and doing the deal. When you wish upon a star, your dreams can come true. Don't ever, ever, ever let anybody in this program tell you that you can't do something. Because I don't care what you've got in your past. With God, good people, and the fellowship and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can do anything. I'm living proof. God bless you.
I want to thank both speakers for being here. I didn't feel well earlier today and was kind of dreading coming here as usual, and wouldn't have missed it for the world. This was a fundraiser for the convention next May. I think we brought in about just under $500 for the meal ticket. So the Heart of Texas Convention is May, I believe, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. I hope you'll all mark it on your calendars. If you want to do some service work, come on down. And I'm going to get Terry to go ahead and do the last.
Okay, if y'all will stand, we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. James, you want to take us out?
Who keep us clean and sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven.